Blue Dot, Episode 13, Astronaut Abby.
This is Blue Dot. I'm Dave Schloem.
And I'm Matt Schiltz.
Today, Matt, we're going to talk to a very inspirational young woman.
Abigail
Harrison. Abigail Harrison, a.k.a. Astronaut Abby. She's one of those rare people who set a goal early in life and is actively pursuing it and you're making it into a real thing. And she wants to be an astronaut. She wants to be the first person on Mars. And along the way, she's learned that no matter what, she's just going to be the best that she can be and help other people do that too. And that's what makes her just an amazing person.
And she's really owning this personality and this goal. And Astronaut Abby is it's a self moniker.
Yeah, it's her Twitter handle is at Astronaut Abby. And that's how I became aware of her. And she's the real deal. I would not be surprised if in 2030, you know, she was on the first mission to Mars, putting her boot prints on the regolith, the soil on Mars.
And she's really doing, she's fully using the self-branding techniques that exist now with social media.
In a positive way, to
Absolutely.
Help people, to help her and to help other people. That's what's wonderful about
it. Well, yeah, beyond her being an astronaut and wanting to be an astronaut someday, she also is a big part of this nonprofit.
Yeah, the Mars Generation. She's going to tell us all about it. So let's talk to Abigail Harrison, also known as Astronaut Abby. Abby, welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me on today.
Hey, thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join us. I'd like to begin at the beginning. When did your interest in space begin? I believe it involved a coffee table book.
Yeah, so for as long as I could remember, and I can't place an exact age on this, but I was probably around 5 years old when I have my first memories of wanting to go into space or of wanting to be an astronaut. I dreamed of being an astronaut, and I dreamed of what it would be like to be in space, what it would be like to float around and to make discoveries. And a really big part of that was that as I started to express these interests and these dreams to my parents, my dad bought me this book called The Universe. And it was this huge coffee table type book, the kind of thing that people don't necessarily actually read, but they put out on their coffee tables to look impressive to guests or some such. But he bought me this book, and he used to sit down with me every night on the weekends and read part of it to me before I went to sleep. And pretty soon I was reading it on my own, and I was memorizing what quarks were, and I was learning about the different systems that govern gases on Jupiter, just all sorts of crazy things. And so this book was really influential to me developing this dream that initially was just a childhood folly, of course, you could say, and it turned it into a reality.
Was there a moment where it went from childhood, you know, because let's face it, lots of little kids dream about being an astronaut or a fireman or you name it. Was there a moment when it really started to become a real thing for you when it's like, okay, no, I really want to be an astronaut?
Yeah. So as far as that goes, I can't remember a defining moment where it became a real thing for me, because for as long as I can remember, it has been a very real thing, even before I started to develop it into this more realistic dream. It always was real, but I think that something that mirrors that in some way is that when I was 11 years old, my mom realized that I had been talking about going to space for 6 years straight. And after hearing about this constantly all the time, one day she sat me down and she had a really serious conversation with me where we talked about, you know, the odds of becoming an astronaut and the difficulties involved and all the education that was necessary and just all these different hardships. And she really wanted to make sure that I understood that, you know, it's great to have childhood dreams, but that if this was something that I wanted to do, there was a particular path that would need to be taken. And so that day I went away and I spent the evening, you know, doing research, and I came back the next day and I sat down with her again, and I had printed out two sheets of paper that I had written up different plans on. And one was a plan of how I could become an astronaut by going through the military, and the other was a plan of how I could become an astronaut by going through a civilian scientist route. And so I think that was a really important point, where not only did it solidify my dream into a goal for me, but it also showed it and proved it to my mom, who then went on after that point to be, honestly, my biggest supporter.
Well, speaking of your mom, she took you to see a launch at the Kennedy Space Center, and you met an astronaut there. Can you tell us that story?
Yeah. So when I was 13 years old, it was back in 2011 when the shuttle program was ending, and STS-134, Space Shuttle Endeavour, was going to go off. And we weren't necessarily sure at that point if STS-134 would be the last or the second to last shuttle to go, because there were, you know, budgetary constraints and things like that that were still being worked out. And so my mom kept hearing about this, and I told her about it a couple times, and she was hearing about it from other people and reading things about it. And one day she decided that if I wanted to be an astronaut, and if this was a part of space history that was happening now, something that was happening in my lifetime, this was the vehicle that during my childhood brought people to space, it was something that I should go and see. And since it was such a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, she dropped everything and took me down to Florida and took me to see this launch. But it wasn't actually the launch that ended up being the really important part of this story. The launch was interesting to see, and it was definitely very cool. But what ended up really, I guess this sounds a little bit hokey, but it's true, really changing my life, was someone that I met in the airport on the way back. And that was Italian astronaut Luca Parmitano. So my mom had met him earlier, when he was giving a presentation at an area that they didn't allow kids into. And she had told him a little bit about me, and they wanted to set up a meeting, but there wasn't, you know, scheduling difficulties, didn't allow for it. But as we were going through the airport, she pointed him out and goes, "Abby, I think that might be Luca Parmitano." And so the background here is that Luca shaves his head, so he's bald. And I looked at her and I went, "Ugh, Mom, not every bald guy is an astronaut. Jeez." But she convinced me that it was him. And I just could not believe that this idol of mine, this hero, was walking through the airport just like the rest of us, just a normal person. But so I went up and I introduced myself, and it was Luca. And he ended up offering to sit down with me and chat and answered all my questions about being an astronaut, ended up spending about an hour just talking about his career and my future goals and all of that. And at the end of it, he gave me his email address, and he said, "I will be your astronaut. If you have any more questions, email me." And so that fostered a relationship that ended up being really important a couple years later, when we got to work together while he was on the International Space Station.
Well, let's lead into that. About this time, you know, I became aware of you through your social presence as Astronaut Abby, at Astronaut Abby on Twitter, and, you know, noticed you through people that I already followed and who followed me, and started to pick up on there was something really special going on here. And I'd like to know, when did you really develop that online presence?
Yeah, so the social presence, my social media channels actually started around the same time that I met Luca at this launch back in 2011. And the story behind that is that I was at the same time working on a National History Day project, which that's something that to this day, even now, I like to try and involve space in all the aspects of my academic life that I possibly can. So whenever I get the option of choosing my own topic, I immediately try and tie some aspect of space exploration or STEM education into the topic. And so I'd done that with this National History Day project. I was talking about debate and diplomacy on the International Space Station. And for part of it, I wanted to get some primary sources. So I wanted to talk to some of the engineers who had actually put the work into both building the International Space Station and making the connections between countries that made this possible. And my mom recommended that a good place to start looking for people who could answer my questions about that was on Twitter. And so I set up a Twitter, and I set it up as she actually, it was great. I was 13 years old, and she sat with me and helped me write my little 140 character bio. She was like, "What do you want this to say? Okay, here's a quick picture of you or whatever." And which is the way it should be with kids on social media. Their parents should be actively involved. And so I set that up and I started using it to try and contact people at NASA. And I did. I got my quote. I got an interview. There was a really wonderful engineer who had worked on the International Space Station who ended up giving me her phone number. And I called her and we talked for a couple hours. And she was just absolutely fantastic to talk to. But the other thing that happened with this was that it wasn't just the people that I was reaching out to and the engineers that I was trying to get in contact with who ended up responding to me. There were a lot of people on Twitter who were super excited about the ambitions that I wrote about in my bio and about the questions that I was asking and the excitement that I was showing for space exploration. And so I decided at that point that this might be a good opportunity to use this platform, this social media platform, to both share my own dreams and my journey towards becoming an astronaut and hopefully, you know, connect a little bit more with the space community and work to make sure that people stayed excited and inspired about space travel. So it shifted from a school project to what eventually turned into a nonprofit where I now have, I think it's around 500,000 people interacting with my social media channels.
You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Shlom along with Matt Schultz, and we are talking to Abigail Harrison, Astronaut Abby. Tell us about your nonprofit, The Mars Generation. Why is it called that?
So the idea behind The Mars Generation is that going to Mars is something that is not, it's not a fiction anymore. This is a reality for our generation. It's something that is not only very likely to happen, but almost certain to happen. But the caveat on that is that if we want this to be a reality in the next couple decades, if we want this to be a defining factor of the things that we did, we need to be providing the resources and the inspiration and the education for students now, for young people today, to be able to be the scientists and the engineers and the policymakers and everything else that is involved with space travel and with innovation in the future. So the Mars Generation is an organization that is looking to do our part in creating that future. We're looking to both inspire kids and to provide a venue where they can meet like-minded youth. And also one of the big parts is providing space camp scholarships to kids in need.
Abby, you talked about going the civilian route rather than the military route, and you're a student now at Wellesley College in Massachusetts. So what are your educational goals, and how do they fit into that civilian big picture?
Yes, that's a great question. Thank you. I am, like you said, currently a first year at Wellesley College, which is a small liberal arts college. And I am doing a double major in astrobiology and Russian. So my idea behind that was that I wanted to go to a liberal arts college because I think that it's really important not to get too boxed in or narrowly focused into any one field. There are a lot of aspects which are really important to, I think, education that you don't necessarily get if you are too focused on one thing. And that's also why I'm doing a double major, is because it's very easy to become tunnel visioned, I guess you could say, in the sciences, to look at what you're doing and say this is the only thing that's important. But doing a major, a double major, where I have one major in a hard sciences field like astrobiology and one major in a more political science-esque field like Russian area studies allows me to stay really up to date with what's going on in the world, and it allows me to continue to hone my critical reading skills, those types of things.
What advice would you give to other people around your age? You know, you're an advocate for promoting STEM educational efforts. Do you think that attitudes are changing for young people in general, and girls in particular, you know, when it comes to pursuing educational opportunities and careers in science, technology, engineering, math? Why do you think many kids just don't see that career path as a positive thing to do?
Yeah, I definitely think that things are changing. I think that we are becoming more open to this idea that science and STEM can be a very cool field, and that it can be a hip, interesting field to go into, which is important because that's a cultural shift that we certainly want to encourage. As far as students, and especially girls, generally in their preteen years, so between about 10 and 14 is where we see a major drop in girls interested in STEM. Part of it is that there just are not enough popular role models out there. There are not enough women who are in the media for doing STEM or for being active in the STEM field. We see a lot of current popular figures such as Neil deGrasse Tyson or Bill Nye or Buzz Aldrin who are out there and they're promoting STEM and they're promoting space exploration, and they're so fantastic, and it's wonderful to see what they've been doing, and they're a big part of this cultural shift that we've been having. But where that continues to fall flat is that even with those types of people, they're still not representing women in the way that we'd like to see happen. And so I think that one of the most important things that we can do if we want to continue to see a greater increase, not just in interest in STEM in young people, but interest in STEM in young women, is to provide them with more positive role models.
You're listening to Blue Dot. I'm Dave Schlom along with Matt Schiltz, and when we come back, we'll be talking more with Abigail Harrison, also known as Astronaut Abby. And we're back talking with Astronaut Abby, Abigail Harrison, 18-year-old student at Wellesley College, and a person that says she's going to be the first astronaut on Mars. Are you excited about the prospects for the near future of NASA with the Space Launch System and the new Orion capsule, the capability to go back to the moon, say, in deep space?
Oh, I am absolutely excited. I am, you could say, over the moon. About the Space Launch System, I've seen it not necessarily become an idea because it's been an idea for a while, but I've seen part of it as it begins to grow up, as it begins to become more of a real thing, just by virtue of talking to scientists and engineers who are working on it currently, on working on making this a reality. And it's so exciting to imagine that In the very, very near future, we're going to have the capabilities to go so far, to do so much, and to have a vehicle like the Space Launch System that is so versatile that it can be used for any number of interesting different space exploration opportunities. I'm very excited to see that in the next couple of years.
What kinds of things do you like to do for fun that are not just necessarily space related?
So I'm also a varsity diver for my college. I compete in the NCAA Division III league on 1 and 3 meter diving. So that takes up a fair bit of my time. But in my other free time, I like to, I play recreational violin, so not part of a group, just I do tunes on my own. I do a lot of partner dancing. So I dance something called contra, which is a type of traditional North England or Northeastern folk dance. I dance waltz, I do blues, I do swing, just all of those types of things. Other than that, I really enjoy doing artsy things. So I like to knit various things and just other things that involve, you know, working with your hands.
And you do find time to sleep and eat, right?
I sleep less than I should. But it's working so far, so.
It seems to me, just talking to you, that with your big dreams and your aspirations, you must have gotten some pretty good support along the way, and you've mentioned your parents. So many kids don't get that kind of support, and tell us how you feel about that.
Yeah, so there are a lot of ways that parents can either support or not support their children. And I was lucky enough to have both parents, but especially my mom, who was incredibly supportive in every way possible of my dreams once she realized how serious I was about them. There has not been a moment since I was 11 that she doubted not only that this was something that I wanted, but that it was something that I was capable of. And she has poured every resource at her disposal into helping me make this dream a reality and improving my future in any way that she can, for which I will always be so incredibly grateful. But there are a lot of kids out there whose parents either don't support them emotionally or in other ways towards their dreams, which can be very detrimental because our parents are people that we generally respect a lot and we look up to. We take our cues from them about how we should grow up and how we should live as citizens in this world. And so when they don't approve of something that you dream of doing or of something that you are doing, that can really take its toll on dreams. And then you have the other side of students who parents are maybe not capable of providing financial support for something that they want to do, which is also, it happens a lot, and it's sad to see. And so that's something that I've grown up knowing that I was extremely fortunate to have a parent who was so committed and dedicated to my dream. And it's a big part of why I decided to start the Mars Generation and why the Mars Generation has the values and the programs that it does as its core values. Because it's this idea that every student should be inspired and should be supported in doing what they want to and in helping to make the world a better place. And the Mars Generation is looking at doing that by providing resources and education and things like opportunities like going to space camp, connecting students with other students and with other leaders in the industries that they're interested in, those types of things to hopefully help to bridge some of those gaps between students who don't have the familial support that, you know, we would all hope they would.
For a parent or a student listening right now, where can they go to check out the Mars Generation?
So the best place would probably be to go to www.themarsgeneration.org. We are also on Facebook and Twitter, where you can find us either the Mars Generation on Facebook or on Twitter, it's @TheMarsGen. And we're always happy to answer any questions that you or your students might have and would love for you to come join our community.
Abby, so many people think it would be great to be a NASA astronaut, and a lot of people work really hard at becoming that, but the truth is there's only a few people that get to be astronauts. So for you, is it kind of like Mars or bust, or have you considered, especially now that you're in college, have you considered other career options?
Yeah, so that's a really great question, and that's something that actually I address a lot of times with students when I go and speak to them, especially when I know that there are students in the audience who maybe have the same dream that I do, which is to be an astronaut. And that is that being an astronaut is not your primary career. So to become an astronaut, you need to have an advanced degree in your field. Most astronauts have master's or doctorates in a STEM field, and you need to have a minimum of 3 years of ethical responsible research in that field as well. And so for someone to become an astronaut, they have to have already spent time working in a job or in a field, and that creates a really good built-in, I guess you could say, plan B, that being an astronaut can be your plan A, and it can be your end goal, and it can be something that you have set your heart on and that you desire so fully. But you have to do something else along the way. You have to have another job, another career that you are involved in. So for me, that's astrobiology. That's the industry that I'm looking at getting my degree in and then hopefully going to work in. And so the important part about this plan B, and this is for any student out there who's looking to build in a plan B into their future, and especially for students who want to be astronauts, is that you have to make sure that your plan B is something that if you don't end up accomplishing your end goal or your plan A, you are happy and satisfied and fulfilled with your plan B. So you need to be following something that you love and being in a field that you're extremely interested in, regardless of where you end up in the end.
Finally, real quick, because we're out of time, and I find it very inspirational talking to you and about your aspirations. For someone listening right now, whatever their age, what's the best advice you can give them based on what you've learned?
The absolute best advice that I could give anyone, irregardless of what your dream is, what field it's in, whether it is in STEM or in a field completely unrelated to STEM, is to be loud and to be proud about your dream. Because if you are not vocal and you're not advocating for yourself, nobody else will know what you're trying to do or what kind of support you need in order to accomplish these goals. I have found that a lot of the opportunities that I've gotten in my life that have helped me have been from me being vocal about what I'm hoping to do and from not being afraid or ashamed to talk about something that seems like it might be impossible or seems like it might be so far in the future. Because if you talk about something with enough confidence, then other people will be extremely willing to reach out a hand and do what they can to help you with it. But if you never talk about it, people won't even know that this is a dream or a goal that you have.
And on that note, Abby, best of luck to you in your future, near and far. And thanks for spending time with us today.
Yeah, thank you so much. It was enjoyable.
Abigail Harrison, a.k.a. Astronaut Abby. You can follow her on Twitter at Astronaut Abby and visit her website, astronautabby.com. Matt, I really believe that young woman's going to be putting her boots on Mars someday.
I can't imagine someone who's more likely. Let's just vote her most likely to land on Mars.
Most likely to succeed landing on Mars. Thanks for joining us on Blue Dot, a production of North State Public Radio. Follow us on Twitter at NSPR News or me at Dave Shlom. And I'm reminding you that from deep space, we all live on a pale blue dot.